The following is intended solely for the use of those with a sense of adventure.
I'm shaking the dust of this town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world.
This is Travel with Hawkeye. Here's your host, Mark Hawkeye Lewis.
Well, since I started this podcast, there's been one guest that I've wanted to have on because she is the first lady of travel, in my opinion, and that is Patricia Schultz, who wrote the book 1,000 Places to Visit Before You Die. And she is on today's podcast. And so we will be talking to her momentarily. And if you do not have this book in your library and you like to travel, shame on you, because you need to have this. This is really, if there's only one travel book you have, it needs to be 1,000 Places to See Before You Die by Patricia Schultz. So we'll talk to her in just a few moments. Also, we have Dr. Charisse Roth from Ask.Vet on. And a lot of people like to travel with their pets. Is that a good idea? I've done it once, and it was not a good, it didn't work well for our family. But there are circumstances that I would consider it again. But there are precautions that you need to take if you're going to travel with your pet. And Dr. Roth will be with us shortly to talk about all those. But first of all, Patricia Schultz joining us on our podcast. And Ms. Schultz, there's actually two versions of this book. There's the original one that came out like 15 years ago. Then a few years ago, you came out with a second edition. And explain the difference between the original version and the current edition of 1,000 Places to Visit Before You Die.
In brief, the original places got entirely rewritten and in most cases merged so that it becomes more of a kind of experience versus a particular destination. And really why that happened is I think it's the way people travel, and it also allowed me to open up the book to hundreds of new places. So the book is, I think, an entirely new book with, as I said, so many new places, 28, 30 new countries, color photographs. It's quite a different, even visually to look at it, you can tell it's quite a different book. And it took me 5 years just to do the revision, in addition to the 8 years that it took me to do the original. So a lot of effort was put into it. But hey, when you love what you do, you really never work a day in your life. So it's been a labor of love.
Now, let me ask you this, of the 1,000 places that were in the first book, and how many of those did you visit yourself, and do you have a staff that helps you? Because, I mean, that's quite an endeavor to visit 1,000 places.
Yeah, well, you know, as I said, with the original that took 8 years, it was really many, many years prior to that that I had kind of been culling and collecting experiences and favorite places, because I had been writing travel guides for decades, really, and traveling all my life. So a lot of places did not get revisited from earlier visits. The Grand Canyons and the Metropolitan Museums of the world and the Louvres and the Iguazu Falls don't change over time. So I really focused on visiting new places. And so in total, in answer to your question, probably about 80% is my gut response to that, although I kind of need to sit down some rainy day with a pencil, but probably 80%.
Well, you know,
I do get that question often, and I just keep going with the number that feels right to me.
You know, it's interesting because I was visiting my parents this weekend, who retired early and have traveled the world since they retired, and I saw your book on their shelves. And they said that they often go to your book kind of as a reference guide to look for places that they want to go and see.
Yeah, I know. And I met somebody yesterday at a family wedding who in turn had done his honeymoon based on my book. And, you know, I have that moment of panic because I'm thinking you have one honeymoon in your life and I hope I got it right. And in fact, he chose some wonderful place in Fiji that he said that they were over the moon, so to say. So it warms my heart when I hear that because I pretty much did the homework. You know, I put it between two covers and put it out there hoping that your parents and my friend who went on his honeymoon use it for that very reason, because you're kind of lost. You know, the world is huge. The possibilities are endless. And where do you even begin? I mean, people are so daunted, I think, sometimes that they wind up just, you know, rearranging their closets. We have such precious time for vacation. And what do you do with it?
Oh, I know. Well, we're talking to Patricia Schultz, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die, the New York Times bestseller. And in the new edition, you said there's 28 new countries that are new to the book. Tell us about some of those. Well, how did you discover them? What were your impressions when you went and visited them?
Well, for example, a classic case is Eastern Europe, which when I was researching the first book in the 90s was just coming out of the, you know, Soviet bloc period of history. And they were open for Western tourists, but just barely, and maybe perceived as unfriendly or unwelcoming. And I had visited, but I wasn't all that sure that, you know, the lack of hotels is someplace that you would want to visit in, you know, Romania or Lithuania. But since then, I mean, you know, what a difference 20 years makes. And they are very much blending in now with the Western European possibility. So I included the Baltic states, which are Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. And also the former Yugoslavia was just coming out of a civil war. So now Slovenia, Croatia, which is magnificent, Montenegro, these are all places that before the civil war that ended in 95, they were very much a beautiful destination in the Mediterranean, just east of Italy, and very similar to the Italian coast in some ways. So they're not new to tourism. It's just that they had a blackout moment, but they're back in business. They're more remarkable than ever, and people are flocking there. Not so much American tourists, mostly European tourists. So these are places that I included, hoping that people would understand. I'm still hearing from people, oh, can we go? Well, yeah, it's been 15 years that you can go to Croatia. You know, the dust has settled. But people hear all of these horrible things about the Soviet bloc, civil wars, et cetera, and they never hear that maybe it's now, again, very welcoming and very much a destination you should have on your bucket list.
What was something that you added to the book that you were totally surprised at? Either you heard very little about it and someone suggested it to you, or was it quite different than you thought it would be?
Well, in Central America, for example, not all that far from you, you know, it's all about Costa Rica, Costa Rica, Costa Rica. And I took a trip a few years ago and visited, especially when doing research for the revision, and took a trip to its neighboring countries, which are Panama and Nicaragua, each one very extremely different from the next, but places that then, 5 years ago, were just kind of coming onto my radar or, you know, the traveler's radar. And Nicaragua is just north of Costa Rica and is a very different experience. It's not as expensive, and it's not as Americanized because there's such a huge gringo population in Costa Rica because it is so safe and it is so it was so economically viable for people to retire early there. So Nicaragua is much more Latino. It's much more Central American. I think the experience is much more authentic. And Panama City was a real revelation, kind of like Miami. But when you get outside of the big city, it's beautiful and lush, and the people are lovely, and the islands off the Caribbean coast are great. So those were, you know, considering they were in our backyard and considering they kind of lived in the shadow of Costa Rica for all of these years, it was really interesting for me to see that they existed and that they're not new. I mean, I was hardly the first and the only American there. It's just that I think they're more recently coming onto our horizon as opposed to Costa Rica for 10, 15 years now being very much a place for us to go.
Yeah, I've heard a couple people say the same thing that you just said about Nicaragua, that it's kind of like Costa Rica was 20 years ago. Kind of missed out on it, you go to Nicaragua. And I actually just got... the funny what you said about Panama City, because I went to Chile and I was shocked by how wonderful Santiago was, and it was how modern and clean and just was how prosperous it was. It was really an interesting eye-opening.
We have these ideas in our head that either are, you know, rooted in something we heard about 30 years ago, or else, you know, you just create your own perceptions and your own ideas. And there's a great quote from Aldous Huxley that said, travel is all about going to these places and realizing that the world is wrong. But really, it's about realizing that you are wrong, because whether you realize it or not, you do have these ideas or, you know, imaginations of what is awaiting you or what's there. And then from those misconceptions, you decide whether you want to go or not. And oftentimes you decide not to go for all the wrong reasons. And you do go, and it's always better or more wonderful than you could have expected. In Santiago and all of Chile, what a beautiful country,
gosh.
Right? The coastline, yeah. And so cosmopolitan.
Yes.
So sophisticated, yeah. I guess we think, you know, everything kind of in South America is still the Andes Mountains and, you know, the indigenous markets and Machu Picchu. And but there's an incredible wine industry in both Chile and Argentina. The coastlines are beautiful and just recently being kind of developed. And the people are lovely and educated and welcoming. And it's, you know, we don't get a lot of tourism to South America, not compared to the numbers that go the same distance to Europe. And that always surprised me, because once you do go to South America, you know, people come back raving, as they should.
And let's not forget, you know, actually, I went down there to go skiing, and people are like, you can ski in South America?
Yeah.
And it's,
I know, it's funny.
Yeah.
And a lot of our ski teams in America, the skiing is so excellent, the quality of it is so, you know, very professional, that because we have flip seasons, when it's summer here, they go to Chile to train. And you'll often find them there, you know, people that you otherwise would be following in the news.
Absolutely true. Well, two quick questions before you go. Question number one, is there one place that you, because you are the first lady of travel for us Americans, and as someone said it best, if they get your book, make sure you have your passport up to date, because you're going to want to travel, and you're going to want to travel soon. Is there a place that you have not been to yet that you would like to go?
Well, in fact, yes. There are a couple hundred thousand million jillion places, because the more you travel, the more you realize, I realize that I've barely scraped the tip of the iceberg. And speaking of ice, I've always wanted to go to Antarctica, and I'm going in November. It's springtime there, and it's something that I've wanted to go, and it includes, it's an expedition that includes the Falkland Islands and South Georgia. So I'm like pinching myself, because I think, you know, since I was 11, I've wanted to go. I've always, you know, read the National Geographic coverage, and everybody who comes back talks about how just so pristine and untrammeled and empty and beautiful and serene and
perfect.
Spiritual almost it is.
Yeah. Well, everybody here at Travel with Hawkeye hopes that you have just a wonderful trip, and thank you so much for making a dream come true, for being on our podcast. And I highly recommend, as I said before, if you only have one place on your bookshelf for a travel book, make sure it's 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. Patricia Schultz, our guest on the Travel with Hawkeye podcast. All right, we're going to shift gears here, because a lot of people like to travel on vacation with their pets. And I've done this once before. It didn't work out so well. But I do realize that there are certain precautions you need to take if you're going to do this and if you've done this before. And so I've asked Dr. Charisse Roth from Ask.Vet to join us. So welcome to Dallas. Welcome to the Travel with Hawkeye podcast.
I grew up in Dallas, and so I've actually listened to you.
Oh, how cool.
Back in the day. Yeah.
Oh.
I went to school in Mesquite. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, where are you now?
Now I'm in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Ah, okay. Okay. Well, I wanted to have you on the podcast because I want to talk about traveling with your pets, and we've got some tips and so forth to follow. But also, you know, if you're on the road and your pet gets sick or something gets into something and you need to, you know, contact a vet, especially if you're far away, you can actually do this by going to ask.vet and not having to find a vet, because there may not be one anywhere near you. So explain what ask.vet is.
This is, I think, you know, exactly what clients need as far as that accessibility. And so it's completely text-based, actually, is what it is. And the owners will text in what's going on with their pet. They will text the word vet to 67076. And then they can text in photos. They can text in videos, anything that's going on with the situation. And then they're put in contact with a veterinarian in a couple of minutes.
Can I tell you, since I got you on the phone, what happened in our family this weekend? It was just heartbreaking, as often you see with pets and families. But we had a cat that my daughter adopted about a year and a half ago. And it had when we took it in to get its very first checkup, the doctor said, the blood test came back that it had feline leukemia.
Oh, no.
But they said maybe it was a false positive because the kitten looked so healthy. And in a year and a half, this cat got huge. I mean, it was so active. And then Saturday night, you know, just a normal night, Sunday morning, I woke up and I went to go pet him, and he was just breathing kind of heavy. And then my daughter noticed the same thing and said, I think I need to take it to the vet. The cat had fluid in its lungs, and it didn't even make it to the end of the day.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing, is that cats especially, they are masters of disguise. And with that leukemia virus, that's actually one of the really, really common ways. They either, you know, pardon the pun, kind of circle the drain for weeks and weeks and weeks, or they just go when they're ready to go. And that's so heartbreaking because all of those cats are super young typically. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'll have to go through that.
Yeah. And it, I mean, it was so fast that we went and took him in for tests, and then my daughter took him in for tests, and then she called home and said, you need to come to the vet right now because they're going to have to put him down. And so it was really unexpected. So I go, and of course, it's just heartbreaking, for you to see your child have to go through that with their pet. And she loved that cat. She loved that cat.
Yeah.
And the cat didn't even make it. They were going to have to euthanize it. The cat didn't even make it to when we had to euthanize the cat. It literally died in her arms. I've never seen anything go so fast. Like you said, it was shocking.
Well, yeah. And one of the things that you really have to think about with cats, especially Hawkeye, is that they are predators. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they are designed not to show any weakness, to literally be able to hunt till the end. Right. And mm-hmm. so that's why those twice a year checkups for cats that even, oh, yeah, they're doing great at home are so important, because that's when we get the chance, if we get a chance to pick those things up, because any signs would be really, really subtle.
Yeah, yeah.
If they show any, yeah.
And there's probably nothing we could have even done, because it was just prone for that, yeah. So anyway.
With the feline leukemia, there is a vaccine for it now.
Uh-huh.
But the truth of the matter is when you're adopting cats, most of those cats have already picked up the virus from their mom.
Oh, well. Speaking of all that, the reason I asked you here, first of all, I want to give the website. It's ask.vet, and it's not askvet.com. It's ask.vet. So I want to make sure I get that out there. And the reason I ask you is because obviously we do travel, and a lot of people like to take their pet on vacation. I've done this one time. I may never do it again. But you really got to make a lot of preparations, and you guys are kind of experts in that field also. You've got some tips, and there's some interesting things to do before you go on a vacation with your pet. I kind of want to touch on that for pet owners today. So if we could kind of touch on some of the things that you need to do, Dr. Roth, before you take your cat or your dog on vacation.
Right. Yeah. Some of those things, it depends on where you're taking them for sure. If you are crossing state lines and certainly crossing country lines, then you do have to provide documentation that pet is healthy enough to cross state lines. And so what that looks like is a veterinary visit, usually less than 10 days beforehand, depending on where you're going. If it's a country farther than Mexico or Canada, sometimes they're even more stringent and it's 72 hours.
Boy, I would not recommend anybody take their dog to Mexico or Canada. I just don't think that's a good idea.
It depends on what your dog's career is, right? A lot of really high competitive agility dogs actually do a lot of their competitions in Canada.
Okay.
It's really common to have those guys crossing country lines.
Okay.
But you have to provide documentation that they are healthy and that they are completely vaccinated, not just for the state that you live in, but for the state that you're going to. And that can actually vary greatly. Here in New Mexico, I can do a rabies vaccine every 3 years. Because we really don't have very much rabies here. But Texas, Louisiana, some of those areas actually require it yearly. So if you're on year two of your rabies vaccine in New Mexico, you're fine. But if you're going to Louisiana, Texas, somewhere down south that has a higher rabies incidence, you may not be okay in their eyes for the law. So that's one of the things you have to think about.
Okay.
The other is how your pet is going to behave and how you're going to get them from point A to point B.
Yes. That's the challenge that we had.
Yep. Sometimes they get really car sick, and it's...
And so do humans.
So do humans. That's true. But you really don't really get much warning with the pets. And so if you know that that's something that your pet deals with when you go on even short trips, it's probably going to be a real burden when you're traveling with them. So either A, leave them at home, get them kenneled, have a pet sitter. Or if you're dedicated to taking them with you, really sit down and have a really good conversation with your veterinarian about medications that we can provide. Sometimes it's as easy as Dramamine. Before they get in the car. Mm-hmm. But others need something stronger, need something prescription strength. And so that's when that planning aspect really, really comes in handy.
Yeah, you know, and on top of all that, too, you know, when we took our pet, you know, you have to stop and give your dog bathroom breaks. but I don't, if you're traveling with, you know, so we had to stop and let our dog out. And, you know, we had our leash, obviously. We walked on the side of this country road and, you know, I gave my dog a walk and let him go to the bathroom. How would you do that for a cat? Do you just, I mean, what do? You have your litter box in the back of your SUV? And I mean, I wonder how that would work.
Yeah, and so really, if you're in your SUV, you would actually still leash your cat. And if they're kenneled, hopefully they're kenneled because it's much safer for a cat to be kenneled inside the car. Then you take them out at whatever you're going to stop, let them move around in the back of that vehicle, and have a litter box there in place for them.
Oh, so take the litter box out of the car, put it on the side of the road, and hopefully your cat...
No, just leave it inside the car and let them kind of move around in the car.
Okay.
But that's where it gets really hinky, right? Because if you open the door,
yeah,
and the cat decides to dart. And so that actually leads me to another thing. Make sure that your pets, if you're traveling with them, are microchipped and that your microchip information is up to date.
Okay. Very good advice.
I can't tell you how many times we have had pets and we go, great, they were lost. They have a microchip. Let's call this owner. And it's like a phone number from like 10 years ago. And then we can't reunite them with their family.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you know, if you're going somewhere, I could see if I was going somewhere, like I rented a lake house and I was going to be there for 2 weeks, I could see taking my dog. But what we did is we went for like a weekend to Arkansas and we took our dog. And so luckily we called ahead. That's very important because we're staying in a hotel. Is it not to call ahead and make sure that you are welcome there?
That's exactly right. And it's you have to be pretty specific, unfortunately, because there are some places that are fine with you having like a small breed dog there, but that will not let you have a large breed dog or certain breeds in their hotel, which I'm sure is for, you know, liability insurance reasons, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that is something that you really do have to be specific about, you know, not just, hey, can I bring my dog? It's, hey, can I bring my 50-pound pit bull? Or, hey, can I bring my 75-pound Great Dane? He's a puppy. Is that okay? And so, you know, that's something that you really do have to think about. And then the other part of that is if you're traveling with your pet at that location, that means other pets have been there and you want to make sure that your pet is protected from any diseases that previous pets may have been carrying. So that means making sure they have good flea and tick preventative on board. That means making sure they have heartworm prevention, because if a mosquito bites, you went to Arkansas, mosquito bites a heartworm positive dog in Arkansas and then comes to bite your pet and your pet is not protected, you've now brought heartworm disease back with you to Texas.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is, you know, if you're staying in a hotel that is pet-friendly and think that you got it all taken care of and you go out for the day, you leave your dog in the room. In my case, I found it important, even though I hate to do this, to kennel my dog, put him in his kennel, in his carrier, because you never know if housekeeping is going to open the door and come in and clean the room. Yep. And the next thing you know, you come in, your dog is gone.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. And those are definitely things that you do have to really consider. So sometimes, you know, I think it depends on the nature of your pet. If they're calm, handle change well, then it's fine to travel with them. And there are certainly bonding experiences that you can have on the road together. But if your pet is high anxiety, you know, and it's stressful for them every time they move locations, then it may be best to leave them at home in their environment with somebody keeping an eye on them. You know, one of the things that we do with Ask.Vet is also we are a resource for pet owners that are traveling and that, hey, I am, you know, 350 miles away from my regular veterinarian. Something's going down with my pet. What do I do? And that's one of the things that we really help with. We not only, you know, give you information about the situation that you're dealing with, but we also work to find you a veterinarian close to where you are at that specific point in time.
Wow, that's a fantastic service. Okay, I want to touch on one more thing before I let you go here. And I see this more and more is people traveling with their pets on airplanes. And any tips for people who bring their pets on airplanes, both who have larger dogs and can't bring them up in the cabin and those who have smaller dogs and bring them up in the cabin?
Yes. And so there are for my larger dogs that have to be down in the wheelhouse, so to speak, in the below the cabin, there are a few breeds that I will never let fly, that I will not release them to fly because it's not safe. So those would be the dogs with the squish faces. So boxers, bulldogs, I will never, ever allow to travel underneath an airplane because it's not pressurized And some of those guys have difficulties breathing to begin with, just walking around. And it actually can prove to be fatal. The other part of that is it's also not temperature controlled. And so if it is a breeze that it's safe to travel, you have to keep in mind when you're trying to get your pet there. So if you are traveling in Texas, let's say you're flying from Amarillo to Houston, and it's in the middle of August, your flight better be first thing in the morning or late at night, because there's going to be that lag time in between flights, and they're going to treat them like cargo. So they're going to be sitting out on the tarmac in 100-degree weather with no water available. Mm-hmm. And 85 degrees in my patients is high enough for them to get heat stroke. And so I've actually had a patient pass away that way, and it's really, really heartbreaking. So I'm kind of a stickler for when I allow pets to travel. If it's too cold for them, if it's too warm for them, then I have a really good conversation with the owner. And if you're relocating, then maybe we try and find another time to have that pet travel. But if it's I want to take them on vacation with me and it's not right for the pet, then I definitely speak up. For the small ones in the cabin, it depends on their personality. You know, if they are kind of small, yappy, high anxiety, then it's probably not best for them to be inside the cabin, because I don't really like sedating pets that go on an airplane. It's the same reason why airlines won't serve you tons of alcohol while you're on an airplane, because you have to be able to control your blood pressure as you change altitude. Even though the cabin is pressurized, you still have to be able to compensate for that. And it's exactly the same in those little guys. And so if I sedate them, they're not able to compensate, and they can actually pass away in the air.
Very good advice. Very good advice. So the takeaway from all this, if you are going on vacation, you want to take your pet, it's best to go visit your vet before you take your pet on vacation and just ask any questions.
That's exactly right. And, you know, it's also, it helps you to be more prepared at the things that you don't think about. Like, for example, fleas in New Mexico carry plague.
Oh, wow.
And so if you're not, yeah. And so if you're not, if your pet is not on flea and tick preventative, you could be bringing a really serious disease back into your house. And so as veterinarians, it's our job to help keep your pet safe. But also part of that is making sure that the family is safe as well.
All right. Well, Dr. Roth, really appreciate your time this morning. Okay. I want to give out the website again. It's ask.vet. And it's a service you can text the word vet to this number, 67076. The first question is free,
right,
but it's a licensed vet that will help you out, especially if you're traveling and you're somewhere and you're not anywhere near your vet. What a great service. Dr. Roth, thank you very much. And some things to think about for people who want to travel with their pets.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, before I let you go on our Travel with Hawkeye podcast, I want to give a special thanks to Patricia Schultz, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die, and Dr. Cherise Roth from Ask.Vet. I want to remind you to follow us on social media, especially Instagram stories, because in a few weeks we're taking the show on the road, so to speak, and we're going to Rome for my parents' 80th birthday, my dad's 80th birthday, taking him to Rome. So you'll be able to follow our adventures on Instagram stories and our Twitter account. You know, all the other avenues too, but more on Instagram stories. So follow us there. You can find us at travelwithhawkeye.net, and there's links to all our social media there. So on behalf of everybody that's been part of this, we want to thank you for making us part of your podcast experience. I'm Mark Hawkeye Lewis. Remember, the world is out there. Your adventure awaits. This has been the Travel with Hawkeye podcast.